Good morning. It's wonderful to be here with you once again. I have to say that I have a particular interest in this morning's session, this morning's class. And perhaps, I think maybe the first thing I said to you in our, when we began this semester, all the way in towards the beginning of Elul, one of the first things I said to you is that one of the reasons I was excited about this class is that it ran not just before the holiday season, but it continued after the holiday season. And I think that's really important, and it's often not done. We often do the preliminary work. We talk about things before the holidays, and then we switch to a new semester, and the new topics begin, and we sort of, you know, leave aside what we spoke about before. And so I was particularly excited about this, the way the course has landed, so that we have an opportunity not just to do the preliminary work, but also to do the follow-up. And I want to remind you of one of the first people I spoke about, the young gentleman who came to me on Yom Kippur during the break, who said to me, you know, Rabbi, I do tshuva every year for a specific sin, but every time, you know, I'm earnest, I'm sincere, I do tshuva on Yom Kippur, but afterwards, after Yom Kippur, I inevitably falter. You know, what is the status of my tshuva? How do I do better? And that's sort of what I want to talk to you about this morning, which is now the follow-up, which is we had all these wonderful thoughts on the Yom Noraim and Sukkot, the holiday season. We have a lot of plans, a lot of resolutions that we made for ourselves. How are we doing? How are we doing? We just started Chodesh Tov. This is Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. How are we doing now that we enter into the new month? Now that we enter into the rest of the year? So I think that the Jewish calendar is arranged in a way to give us some tips that allow us, that enable us to continue the momentum that we started with, in the holiday season, and to actually implement the ideas and the thoughts and the dreams that we had for ourselves, that we wished for ourselves in the coming year. And I think it does so, I would suggest, by the Torah cycle ending on Simchat Torah and the first Shabbat into the new year post-holiday season. What do we read on the first Shabbat? Breshit. And the story of creation. I think there's a lot in the story of creation that helps us, that enables us to continue this process forward. So what I want to do with you this morning is to learn with you the story of creation. We'll learn the story in and of itself, and then at the end we'll be able to, I think, pluck out some of the helpful tips that the story contains, which allows us to apply some of the lessons to our lives in a class I entitled "Creating the World, Recreating Yourself." So let us begin. Reshit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz. How would you translate that?
That's a classic question.
How would you translate Reshit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay, that I think is the general, the accepted. It's an interesting word. I'm going to put that word in quotes. The accepted English translation. I have not checked the King James Bible version of where everyone knows that this is the translation, the correct translation, or the accepted translation of the sentence. And if this translation is true, then what happens in the what is the essential act of creation? What is God, the first thing that God creates? The heavens and the earth. Okay, that's what generally people think is the accepted translation of the pasuk. But in truth, it may not be the simple reading of the pasuk at all. Yes, you wanted to say. Why so?
It has to be the beginning of something, and therefore you can't just say in the beginning because it's not the beginning, it's the beginning of. Here,
yes.
My next right next to me.
The JPS translation, I assume, will have a little different version.
I mean, I can read what it says.
In one second, hold on with it. I want to get to the JPS translation. I want you to read it in a couple minutes. Let me just first address the Rashi point that you mentioned. Rashi, if you look at source number 3, certainly an accepted perush, we would say, accepted commentary. A commentary that forms our consciousness of the translation of the Torah. We live in a post-Rashi world. I mean, Rashi is one Rishon. There are many other Rishonim who argue on Rashi in many areas, both in the Torah and in the Gemara. But oftentimes, we live in this post-Rashi world. We sort of inherit the accepted approach. The first approach that we're taught when we're kids is often Rashi. And therefore, when we read other Rishonim who are equally, you know, in the same sphere as Rashi, it seems to us those are the alternative opinions. It's a fascinating phenomenon. But what's interesting here is that the accepted approach is actually not Rashi. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth is suggested by the Ramban, by Nachmanides. Certainly an astounding authority. But Rashi actually offers a different approach. So if you look at Rashi, look at source number 3. Rashi says, "Ein mikra hazeh omer ela darsheni." This pasuk comes and almost begs for an explanation. Look at the underlines. "V'im batel farsho kipshuto." If you want to explain it according to the literal definition, a literal translation, this is how you should explain it. Breshit briat shamayim va'aretz. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, va'aretz hayta tahu vavohu, the land was tahu vavohu, was filled with chaos, v'choshech, and darkness. Yomer Elokim Hior, and God said, "Let there be light." And the Torah did not come to teach you the exact order of creation from the beginning of the actual act of creation, meaning what existed according to Rashi before you get to Bereshit. Meaning before you get to the Parsha Bereshit, there's a whole creation that existed that we don't read about. What did God create beforehand that we don't read about in Bereshit?
Stuff.
Chaos, maybe darkness. Okay, we'll see more stuff that God created. But all of these things happen before we even get to the beginning of the word Bereshit. And the Psukim are not here to tell you the exact order, the history, the science of the order of creation. It's not there. Because God created things before you get to Bereshit. But the Torah begins with another assumption. The Torah says, in the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, we'll talk about what those terms mean, heaven and earth in a couple of minutes. When God created the heavens and the earth, the world was chaos and darkness. Now, if Rashi isn't enough of an authority to convince you that this is the simple reading of the text, then of course we have the greatest authority, which is Art Scroll. If you look at source number four, Art Scroll translates, this is explicit translation, Art Scroll, can't get any better. In the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth, when the earth was astonishingly empty, with darkness on the surface of the deep, and the divine presence hovered upon the surface of the water, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. I apologize for the typos in the sense. So here you have Art Scroll explicitly telling you that when the Torah opens what already exists, you have... What exists, by the way? Darkness, what else?
Chaos,
what else?
Emptiness,
what else? Water. Water exists. When God comes to the beginning of Bereshit, water already is there. It's Tahom, the depths. The water is there. Now, how does the JPS translation translate it? Would you like to tell us?
Very similarly.
Of course.
God began to create heaven and earth, the earth being unformed and void, with darkness over the surface of the deep and a wind from God's taking over the water, God said.
Right.
Which is very similar.
No, of course, because this is the simple reading of the Psukim. So it's not in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, but in the beginning when God began, let's take the JPS translation, when God began to create the heavens, what does it mean he began to create the heavens? So,
in the process.
So we're going to read, we'll continue reading through the Psukim, and we'll see actually when God did create the heavens and the earth. It's actually at a different point. This is in the beginning when God created the heavens and the earth, the world was filled with darkness, with chaos, and with water. So what happened? The first thing, the first act of creation was what? Light. Okay, let's go back to source number one, Pasuk Yemo. Vayomer Elokim Yihior, Vayihior. And there was light. Vayar Elokim et Or Ki Tov. Vayavdel Elokim ben Or ben Achoshech. And God saw that the light was good. And he separated, and God separated between the light and between the darkness. And he called the or day and darkness night, and it was the evening, it was the morning, it was the first day. Okay, so I just want to point out a couple of other words we're going to get back to. What are the key words? What are the verbs here? What is it that God is doing? What are the verbs in the first day that is used here to tell us what God does? Bayar, seeing. Bayomer, he says. Bayikra, he calls. No. Bayavdel, and he distinguishes. So he sees, he speaks, he calls, and he distinguishes. Okay, Bayavdel. Okay, we'll keep that in mind. Let's go to the second day. Bayomer Elokim yihi rakia b'toch hamayim, b'mavdil ben mayim l'mayim. And God said, let there be a rakia in the midst of the water. And it was divided between the waters. And this is one of my favorite words, because if I ask people, what does rakia mean? They say firmament. And it's sort of, it's a funny term, because we know, you know, English, we like English, but nobody really knows what firmament. It's like when you do kiruv, and you don't want to say to somebody, you have to put on tefillin, so you say you put on phylacteries, because that's a word that's much easier to understand than tefillin. Tefillin is too complicated. So here we have firmament. Rakia is firmament. What does firmament mean? What does rakia mean? Something solid, yafes, something hard. What does it mean, something hard? These are the simple reading of this pasuk. Let's look exactly what God did. Now remember, the earth was just full of water. The Shekhinah, if you say Hashem, was merachefet al pnei hamayim. It was just water. It was darkness. He created light. It was chaos. So what did God do? Vayas elokim et rakia vayavdel ben hamayim shemitachal rakia ben hamayim shemeal rakia vayichein. So what God did was he separated again. Vayavdel. Next word. Same words here. Vayomer, he said. Here we have a vayas, which is very important. He did, which we'll get back to. Vayavdel, and he separated between the waters underneath the firmament and over the firmament. What does that mean, he separated the waters under the firmament and over the firmament? What do you think he did?
He separated between the land.
Well, there's no word land here yet. There's no word land.
It makes it sound.
Yeah.
Making it sound like firmament is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that he put something underneath it and mm-hmm. something above it. What was that thing?
The thing that is rakia, is firmament. It's a hard layer. It's a hard layer. What did he do with the hard layer?
Where is that firmament now?
You're not stepping on it. It's high up. Look here. Vayikra Elokim l'rakia shamayim. And God called the rakia heaven. So what did he do? The world, there was no world. It was all tahom. There was depths. It was water. So what God did was he took a firmament, a hard hard this layer, and he lifted up half the water. I don't know how much, what the percentage is, but the water up into the air, and he put it on top, and it was held. How was the water on top held? By the firmament, by the rakia. So you have water that's above us, and you have water that is now back below, or I'm assuming that what happened now is that there's space. It's not so simple that there's space yet. But he divided, maybe it just stayed right in between, but he divided the upper waters from the lower waters, and this upper region was called Shamayim. It was called heavens. Now, let's keep on going for a second. And it was the second day. Now notice, something is missing in the second day. That God saw and it was good. God doesn't say this in the second day. Why doesn't God say this in the second day? Because it's not finished. Good. Because it's not finished. Why is it not finished? Because still, although God took a lot of the water and took care of it and put it up in the air, still there's water, all this water below that doesn't allow anything to happen yet. So what next does he have to do? If you look at Pasuk Tet, Vayomer Elokim, and God says, Yikavu hamayim mitachat hashamayim el mekom echad v'tera'e hayabasha v'yichen. So what God said is, this is what we need to do. We still have water below. So what we need to do is we need to drain that water down. We need to suck that water down. Okay? We're going to pull that water down. And we're going to keep some of it. We're going to keep some of it in the area. In Pasuk Yud, V'yikra lukim layabasha aretz. What we're going to do is, we're going to suck the water down, and what's going to happen is, what's going to be exposed?
Land.
So apparently, even before we started Bereshit, underneath this tahom, underneath this depth and this water, was land. Now God had to expose that land. How did he expose the land? He took a lot of the water and he put it up in the air, and the firmament held it in place, that's Shemayim. Then he took other parts of the water and he sunk it, he drained it. Drained it down, and let's say he stopped that drain. We'll talk about that in a second. And therefore it exposed the Yabasha, which we could call land or continents or whatever you want to call it. He exposed the Yabasha. But he said, you know what, I don't want to drain the whole thing. I'm going to leave some water there that's going to be helpful. And what's that water called?
Yeah.
Sea, the oceans, all of the rest of the water that we see. So that is, that we're still in the middle of the third day. And God, the first thing he does is he creates light. The second thing he does is he deals with the water. Okay, questions?
I just want to ask a question. When we say Tohu Vavohu and Choshech al Tohom, does it imply that if there would be light, everything would be in order? In other words, I added as another element the Tohu Vavohu, and Choshech is the Kaparoth. But if there be light, would all of creation be in place?
Well, I'm not sure how that would be implied, because in the first day, God created light, and there was still. Now, the problem with this light, the difficulty with this light is that we know that later on he's going to create the two ma'arot, and then there's going to be day and night, and Chazal have to talk about maybe the light they say is ganuz, is hidden, and it's a light for. I mean, there's pshat. Simple reading complications, don't get me wrong. We're going to try to stick to the simplest way of understanding the psukim. And the light then is the first of the creations, yes?
Semantically, he has the word, here JP has the word expanse for it here. Now that makes sense semantically. The word reka and expanse fit. What Hebrew word would be connected to the word rakia that suggests something for
firmament? So I think it's bayirakem. I think that there's a word, we have to look in the, there's another pasuk, there's another word, I'll check it up for you, but I think there are other words that have it, that have rakia, a similar concept. I'll look that up after class to get it for you. Okay, but in the meantime, what we have here is the middle of the third day, God made light, and he exposed the continents by taking care of the Tahom, but taking care of the depths. Let's look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Elokim tatshea aretz desha esav mazriya zera eitz pri asev pri leminoa shezarabo al aretz vayichen. Now God said that the land should produce esav. Okay, I don't want to get into what esav means here. Esav normally is translated as
grass.
But it could mean something else here, but we're not going to get into that in this in the session. We'll need a whole Sefer Bereishis course to talk about that. We're not doing that now. So God said that the land will produce Esav, and it will also produce Eitz Pri. Okay, Abayichem, Vatotzi Arz, Desha Esa Mazria Zel Minev, Vaitza Alse Priya Shazaroba Minev, Vialokim Kitov. Now it's interesting. It's a slight nuance, but it doesn't say Vayas. It doesn't say God made the Esav, or He made the Eitz Pri. What is sort of implied by the that it was there already? That was there. Rashi, in fact, this is Rashi Shita on all of the Perek. And the first day, everything was created in potential, and everything that happened after it was God taking it out. And it's sort of the sense you get from this pasuk. It's not that God needed in all these things, really. It's not that God needed to create them necessarily. He just is. He's activating it. He's enabling it. Meaning, maybe the earth couldn't grow. Why? Because it was underneath all this tahom. And then once it was separated and exposed, so He's enabling it to activating it to move and reach its potential. So that is Kim Kitov Yom Shishi, and we all know that Shlishi has two ketoves. And the reason why it has two, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, I had a wonderful woman, very special woman in my community, Holocaust survivor, passed away a few years ago, and she would only do. She was extremely accomplished professionally, and she would only sign contracts on Tuesday. She'd only do on Tuesday because of double ketov. But the reason why there's a double ketov. The reason why there's double ketov is because the second day creation really didn't end until the third day when Hashem took care of the rest of the water. So that's why you have the double ketov. Okay, now we move to the fourth day. Vayomer Elokim, Yimarot Barkiya Shemayim, Lavdil Ben Ayom Uben Halayla. So God said, you know what? We need to make Ma'orot. We need to make these luminary, these lights, and put them in the heavens, in this Rakiya Hashemayim, to distinguish again the Havdil ben Yom ben Laila, Vayula Otot L'Modim L'Yamim Mushanim, and that will set the times in the calendar. Vayula Marot Perkiyah Shemayim La'ir La'aretz V'Yichein Vayas Elokim Eshnei Marot. Now this is another Vayas Elokim Eshnei Marot Agdolim V'Tamar Agdol M'Mshal Tayam V'Tamar Katan M'Mshal Talayla V'Tikol Chavim V'Tein Otam Elokim Perkiyah Shemayim La'ir La'aretz L'Mshal B'Yom V'Laila Havdil Ben Or Ben Achoshech. So we have another Havdalah. God says, I'm going to create these two light sources, if you call that, the Gadol and the Katan, and it's going to be Mavdil, Ben Ayom Ben Laila. Yes.
I think at this point we get the feeling that man is coming. I mean, it's the preparation. If there's only light and dark, what difference does it make? But when I bring in, there'll be day and there'll be night, and we know that there's a plan.
Okay, could be. You certainly get a sense of, you get a vayas, meaning and beforehand, except for the rakia, God was sort of like dealing with the material. Here now, he's going to begin the vayas, and he's going to do a couple of them to create, to build something new. And of course, one can argue everything is building new could be from the material and the potential that was already existing. That's all other major issue. But you're starting to see, I think we're going to start to see a little more vayas, or vayas will lead to vayivra, which is really a greater word of creation. Yes?
I'm just curious that Yom Rishon,
Yeah. No, it's a big question. How do you reconcile the first day and the fourth day? Because God already says in the first day that there's day and there's night, and now in the fourth day He's saying it's the sun and the moon that's going to create the day and the night. It's a big issue. We're not going to relate to it, but it's an important question. It's certainly one, and that's part of why Chazal sort of reinterpret the first day to mean a different type of light, or you know, maybe a different type of day, different type of night. Yes.
I was going to say, does anybody say, even though we're dealing with this now, that Vayas, that He had made the Ma'orot, and that those may have been there in the first day, but simply today was a placement that he placed.
That's interesting. Well, certainly Rashi says that everything was existed, at least in potential. I don't remember the Rashi on that pasuk. We'll check and see what he says. Okay, let's keep on going. So now we finish the fourth day. Now we're up to the fifth day. So God now made, he said, I'm going to make fish, and I'm going to make birds. Or yishtatsu hamayim, it seems like fish. I'm going to make things that swim in the water, and birds that fly in the fly over ground, al pnei arikia, on this by the heavens. Okay, vayivra elokim et ataninim hagdolim. That's interesting. Let's call nefesh achayar meshes shartsu hamayim liminayim. Let's call ov kanaf liminayu. So God, now this next pasuk is that He created not just the birds and the fish, but the taninim hagdolim. What are the taninim hagdolim? Okay, dinosaurs. Could be the dinosaurs. We don't know. It could be the dinosaurs. Tanin. A tanin in the Torah, I think, at least when it comes to Yetziat Mitzrayim, tanin is probably crocodiles, alligators, right. Actually, which one is in the Nile? Which one is in the Nile? Crocodiles or alligators? Crocodiles. So tanin is probably crocodiles. But crocodiles, don't they have some dinosaur heritage there? Yes. Exactly. Birds do also. That could be with the oaf. Sure. And we had many, I used to live in Manhattan, and I had many of a trip to the Museum of Natural History with my children, and we've learned all about the different theories of how the dinosaurs developed. So, exactly, Tyrannosaurus Rex and the little arms and all those things. Okay. So, whatever it is, it could be that all of those things, all those prehistoric creatures that we see in the museums could have been created on this day. So let's keep on going. Again, Vayar Elokim Kitov, and it was good, and Hashem gave him a bracha. This is new. This concept of bracha, Pruvu Melu Atamayim Biyamim. So that's new. Vayar Vavoker Yom Chamishi. Now we are up to the sixth day. Vayomer Elokim. So Tzei Aretz Nefesh Chaya Lamina Beima Veremesh V'Chayta Eretz Lamina V'Hichein. Vayas Elokim Et Chayat Aretz Lamina V'Et Beima Lamina V'Et Karmesh Adama Lamina Vayar Elokim Kitov. So God said that the earth should produce nefesh chaya. It's interesting that he calls it nefesh chaya. I think that's very interesting. The same thing we see before nefesh chaya. That's an interesting phrase. Maybe we'll get back to. And he produces another vayas et chayat ha'aretz. And now he produces the animals. Vayar Elokim ki tov. God looks back and says it was good. So when does God look back and say it's good? He doesn't do it at the end of the day. When does he say Vayar Elokim ki tov? When he finishes a unit, when he finishes a project. After God finishes a unit, okay, there are units, there are day units, that's clear. But there's also another kind of unit, this creation unit, this creation project. And when God finishes these projects, he says, Vayar Elokim ki tov. Okay, let's keep on going. Next. Pasuk Chava. Vayomer Elokim nasa adam b'tzalmenu kidmutenu. God said we should make man in our image. And he's going to subdue the fish and the birds and the animals. So now God is appointing almost a ruler, if you will, over the over all the other creatures that he made. And God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. And he gave him a bracha, they should be fruitful and multiply and fill the world, and what should they do? They should conquer the world, they should subdue the world. They are, in a sense, the not the universe, but of the world, of the earth at least, or certainly in relation to these animals. They would be the masters of these animals. The Omer Elokim inein natati lechem et kol esav zera zera shal pnei kol arts kol eshabo pri et zera zera lechem yelachla. That's a hint, by the way, what esav means. And I give to you, what is the food that they're supposed to eat? Esav, what are they supposed to eat? Grass? What is esav? Spinach? Plants? Okay, no, actually means something else, but we're not going to have time to do that. But there's a hint over here. They get to eat that too. And God saw everything created and was very good. Now there's one Vayalokim Kitov that is missing. What is missing here? So notice that after the creation of man, there is no Vayalokim Kitov. God does not say, God finishes a project, right? We said that every time there's a project, God looks back and he says, it's good. But yet he finished the project of man, and there is no reflection. There is no reflection of Vayalokim Kitov. But yet, at the end of all of the creation, there's a broader reflection. Vayalokim et kol asher asa, mihine tov ma'od. And it was very good. Vayavoker yom hashishi. And then we look at the next pasuk, which is also a continuation of the story, although it's in Parak Bet. The prakim were put in, of course, not by us. Vayechu shmayim v'aretz chol tzva'am v'chalakim b'yom hashvi ma'achto ha'sha'asa v'yishpot b'yom hashvi v'kom ma'achto ha'sha'asa v'vreichu him at yom hashvi v'kneishoto kivo shabbat v'kom ma'achto ha'shabra alakim la'asot. So here he adds another bracha, and he sort of has another creation. What's his new creation? Shabbat, the creation of Shvitah, of rest. And that, one could argue, is also a kind of creation, because the world beforehand perhaps was a continuous motion. You had the Tohu Vavohu, you had the Tahom, you had God doing all these things, and yet you get to the seventh day, we now learn that there's a concept of Shvitah, of rest. Does that mean that nature itself stops? I think it means that God stops. That God stops. We'll have to talk about that. So what we have over here is a understanding of creation that perhaps is a little different than where we think is the accepted understanding. Meaning the accepted understanding is that God, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But perhaps the pshat, at least according to Rashi, is not that. The pshat is like this. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, when did God create the heavens and the earth? No, when did he create the heavens and the earth? No. We do know. We know exactly.
Before the days started.
No. No, when in the first parak did God create the heavens and the earth? No, not in the first day. He created the heavens on the second day. And he created the land on the third day. It's clear. Breshit bara Elokim et hashamayim, in the beginning, when God created. Or in the JPS, he said, in the beginning of his creation of the heavens and the earth. Or when he began to create the heavens and the earth. That's what you said translation was. The land was filled with tohu vavohu. It was nothing. It was water and darkness. And then, this is all telling you the story of how God created the heavens and the earth. And when did that actually happen? On the second day he created the heavens, when he made a rakia. And he picked it up. On the third day he made the aretz. He didn't make it. He exposed the aretz, let's say, when he sunk the waters underneath. So bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim v'et haaretz is not referring to a past. It's not referring to a statement right that happened at this moment. It's beginning a process. It's telling you a process. And that's why, if you look at the article translation, there's a little nice line. In the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth line, this is so as parenthetically. This is where the earth was. Okay, but we're beginning to tell you the story of how God created the heavens and the earth, which only happens later on, in the second and third day. That would seem to be, at least along with Rashi's reading, or according to Rashi, the simple pshat of the reading of the parak. Yes?
Aretz is Yavasha, because it says he called the Yavasha Aretz.
Mm-hmm.
Which is dry land.
Okay.
But already in Pasuk Bet, there is already Aretz. In other words, there is matter. There is earth.
That's an interesting point.
Existing mm-hmm. already. So there is a suggestion of something happening before Pasuk.
That's interesting. What do you think it means? What is the word? That's interesting. Va'aretz haitato vavo could mean a different aretz, maybe referring to a different kind of like, or the a world, not as opposed to the earth, or maybe it means, how could aretz also mean earth? Va'aretz haita tov vavo. It was covered. It was covered. It was chaos was all about, meaning earth was there. Not just matter. But it was underneath. It was there. It was the aretz we're talking about. Land was there. Not just matter was there, but land was there, and therefore it had to be exposed. So somebody just asked, where did the water come from? The point of the simple of Rashi's reading of Breshit is the Torah doesn't tell us. That happened before. God created the water too, of course. But the Torah doesn't deal with that. That happened beforehand. Yes. Absolutely. It could even be a long question.
Where it says
in the third person, why is that? Sure, that's a very important question. When God said, Nasa Adam B'Tzalmeinu, what is the plural? We will make God. We'll make man in our image. What does it mean in our image? If God is obviously singular and He is one, so the Chazal talk about angels and other things, and that's an important question. And perhaps that's there.
I promise. That's possible.
I'll get you.
Okay. Thank you. That's a very famous, very important issue. Which, what is the plural? When we deal with Nasa Adam B'Tzalmeinu, who's God talking about? Now, so let's just review very briefly. What is the essential act of creation then? It is not creating poof, Shemayim art. What is the essential act of creation as expressed in the first parak of Breshit? What is it?
Making order.
Thank you, Conan. Making order. The essential act of creation is making order out of chaos. That is the act. You make order out of chaos. How do you make order out of chaos? Well, first thing you do is you add some light to the situation, okay? Because it's dark, you add some light. And then you start arranging the chaos. And you separate the chaos. And you know what else you do to the chaos? You give it a name. You call it something. There's an amira, vayikra, and God calls it. What does calling something do for the chaos? It's as important as it is to separate physically, is to name it. Why? You classify. Once you classify something, it's no longer chaos. It's a fascinating psychological insight into our lives, which is that the very act of naming is, in a sense, an act of creation because it gives it order. You call things, you separate, then you can distinguish. Vayavdel, the Havdalah. Havdalah is critical in the order of creation. It's all about, the Chazal talk about the 10 Amirot that God created. Why did God use Amirah, the words, to create? So perhaps one of the layers of explanations is that the Amira itself is an act of creating. It distinguishes, it's Vayavdel, Vayikra. All of that places order. The essential act of creation is to place order on the chaos. That's the first thing. From there, once you have order in the chaos, from there, what can we begin to do? We can begin to make new things. We could begin to vayivra, we could begin to create. We're going to begin to allow the earth to use its potential. And for the esev to grow. All of these things happen once we make order amongst the chaos. then we can make new things. And this is what we see, is the order of the story of creation that's told in Paragraph. Then if you understand this, okay, we'll take a break for a second. Yes. Say again. It's the first thing Adam does. It's actually not the first thing, and it's important. No, but it's important that Adam does what he does, and we're not going to actually talk about this because we're not going to do Bereshit. But if you want another time to do Bereshit, we can do the second parak. It's the whole development of Adam is fascinating, and that's another story. We're reading the first parak, which gives its own impressions of the story of creation. Okay. Well, in the beginning, meaning then there is Vayivra. He does create. I mean, there is creation. This creation of... are you talking about us? You're talking about us. Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're... The point that was raised is it seems that any invention is really making order from the chaos, and it's certainly true in the world, in the Madei HaRuach, the humanities. You know, where I'm from, let's... science, I'm less... less familiar with science, also you could argue absolute observations, and you could find smaller data using greater technology, finding smaller details. But in the philosophical world as well, meaning what makes a great philosopher? You're not. What does being mechadesh? What does it mean? Ein chadash tachat hashemesh. There is nothing. There is no chadash. It's that we name it. We call it the power of language. Language shapes our lives. And it shapes our understanding. It's not just simply how we converse and communicate one to another. Language itself creates. That is what we think of when we think of creation. It's totally true. And the power of language is already expressed right away in the beginning, in the beginning of the Psukim of Sefer Bereshit. Now, if you... Yes?
How does Yesh Miayim fit in here?
So it's a very important question. What's fascinating is, the question is, how does Yesh Me'ayin, something from nothing, fit in here? So the answer is, according to Rashi, is that Rashi certainly believes in Yesh Me'ayin. He just believes it happened earlier. Meaning, as Rashi says himself, the Torah is not telling you the order of how everything was created from zero to something. That happened. It just happened beforehand. Now, what's interesting is the Rambam is a big issue with the Rambam.
Before what?
Before Vayior. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim sort of defended the principle of Yesh Me'ayin, because Aristotle and the ancient Greek philosophers kept as a strong postulate the eternity of the world. So the Rambam was a strong defender of Yesh Me'ayin, and in fact, in one chapter, the Mor Nevuchim writes that, listen, if the Psukim didn't say it explicitly, then, maybe you could talk about it, but it's explicitly against the Pasuk. And I remember reading that, I'm like, it's not really explicitly against the Pasuk. There's other reasons to believe in Yesh Me'ayin. I'm just saying that in Rashi's reading of the Pesukim, it's actually not explicitly against the Pesukim, but it's against one of our pillars of faith, which is obviously critically important.
Who developed the concept of Yesh Me'ayin? Because I don't think it's inherent in the text at all.
Yeah.
The opposite.
Okay. It's a much bigger question. The question is, how did the concept of Yesh Me'ayin develop? And how does it, sure, of course, or take like the Rambam, and the Rambam made it as one of his essential postulates, and why that's important that God creates the world, Yesh Me'ayin. But that'll be for a whole other semester, which would be philosophy, Jewish philosophy on critical postulates. Okay, let me go back here to the story. Now, if you understand this background, okay, which is, for many, perhaps a new reading of the story, but the truth is it's Rashi's reading of the story, and even more importantly, as we said, Art Scroll's reading of the story. that if this is the reading of the story, we can begin to understand and appreciate what happens in the next parsha. When God saw that the world was filled with chamas, he decided to punish the world. And we're told that he punished the world with a mabul. Now, what does a mabul mean? So in English we translate a mabul as a flood. Okay, so a flood. And we might think that a flood, it's a punishment. There can be many ways that God punishes the world. He chose to punish them with a flood. But with this reading of the Psukim, you begin to understand that the mabul wasn't just a punishment. The mabul wasn't a punishment. What was the mabul? The mabul returned the world to the beginning. It returned it to Tohu Vavohu. If you look at Pasuk, look at Source 5. B'shnat sheish me'ot shana v'chai noach b'chodesh ha'sheni b'sheva asi yom l'chodesh b'yom hazeh nivku'u kol mayanot tahom rabba v'arubot ha'shamayim niftachu v'hageshem al haretz arba'im yom v'arba'im layla v'etzem yom hazeh b'noach v'shem v'cham v'yafet b'nei noach v'ishno v'shuz n'she b'nav itam el ha'teva. So that was the day he came to the Teva, and there was Geshem on the land for 40 days and 40 nights. We all know that the Mabul was Geshem on the land for 40 days and 40 nights. But the Pasuk before, when it described the Mabul, it said, Nivku'u ko mayanot tahom rabba, va'arubot ha'shamayim niftachu. So what does that mean? What does Nivku'u ko mayanot tahom rabba mean? No. Yafeh. So Nivku'u ko mayanot tahom rabba means that the mayanot were broken of the depths of the Tahom Rabba. That's one. We'll get back to in a second. Then va'arubot ha'shamayim niftachu. What does arubot ha'shamayim niftachu mean?
The waters came down.
The windows of the world. The arubot ha'shamayim of the heavens were opened. Meaning you have a firmament. Remember, how are the waters being held up? Because of the firmament. How are the waters going to come down? Putting a hole. Putting a window in the firmament. You put a window in the firmament, the water falls down. But what's interesting in this pasuk is that it's clear is that the waters came from two directions. If you look at the Ibn Ezra in source number 7, the Ibn Ezra says, by the underlines, Uchashe nifku alu hamayim. The water went up. Beniftchu chalanot otrot bashmayim v'yardu hamayim. And then the water came down. But it's Babel Arts, and the world was confused. Ve'ein mavdil b'nei v'lai, we'll get there in 1 second. Okay. So what happened is, the way that God, what the Mabul was that God unplugged. He unplugged. Remember, there are two things he did with the water. First, he had to pick it up and put it above, and then he had to drain it below, and he plugged it. And then the way that he punished man was unplugging, so the waters from below came back up, making the hole, the waters from above came down, and you squashed man. And what happened is the world returned to Tohu Vavohu. How do I know the world returned to Tohu Vavohu? It returned to Tohu Vavohu in all ways. In all ways, it became back to Tohu Vavohu. If you look at Pasuk, here, look, source number 6. After Noach came out of the Teva, he said that he's going to bring a korban. Vayomer Hashem alibo, lo asif lekal odet adama, bavur adam ki yetzer lev adam ramenu orav. Lo asif od lakot et kol chay kasha asiti, od kol yimei haaretz zeru k'tzir v'kar v'cham. Meaning God said, no longer will I do what? No longer will I stop the following things from happening. I will not stop the land from growing its asev and harvesting. I will not stop the seasons from happening. And I will not stop the day and night.
Does that mean that he created after the flood?
So what's really interesting here is, we'll get to that in 1 second, actually, maybe before I get to that. So what happened during the time of the flood, as the water was pouring down and the water was coming up, is that the world returned to Tohu Vavohu, and there was no light. It was Choshech again. There was no Yom and Laila. There was no Esev, there was no animals, there was no people. He basically, he didn't just punish. We think of the Mabul as a punishment. It wasn't a punishment. God destroyed the world. He decreated. Or in modern language, he rebooted. Okay? He destroyed what he did. And then Noach is not just the man who survived. Noach begins the recreation of the world. And then Noach becomes Adam. Noach is Adam in our world. And then, and that's where you have, we don't have these psukim here, we have to, again another time, perhaps we'll do Breishit, but that's why you see for Noach a lot of parallel psukim to Adam, with brachot and other things, because Noach becomes the first man in our world. Normally we think the first man in our world is Adam, but the first man in our world, in this sense, is Noach. Now Noach is a descendant of Adam, so you could argue either way. But the first man in this world is Noach. And that's why, or one of the reasons why, I mean, you could argue many reasons, a few reasons. When we talk about the nations of the world have their own mitzvot, we call them the Sheva mitzvot, B'nai Noach. They're not B'nai Adam, they're B'nai Noach. They are B'nai Noach. Humanity is B'nai Noach. So it's a very interesting question. The Gemara in Sanhedrin actually takes the seven and gives it to Adam. That the pasuk starting by Vayitzav is a reference to seven mitzvot that was to Adam. And there's a debate in the Gemara, how do you find the seven mitzvot B'nai Noach? And all different opinions. So that's interesting in of itself. But here it's not just the Sheva mitzvot, it's that they're B'nai Noach. It's the Umot HaOlam are B'nai Noach. And that's because Noach, in a sense, in one sense, Adam is the first man in the world, because Noach comes from him. In another sense, Noach is the first man in the world. In fact, Chazal say, there's a medrash that says that the world was destroyed many times. And what does it mean the world was destroyed many times? It could mean, that you have these floods. Until God said at the end that, you know, no more. You know, we have to do something else. So it's a whole different, you know, understanding, not just of the first parak, but really the evolution of the story of Breishit. And also, you know, so many layers of the story. It's not just that God said that there's Hamas in the world, and therefore I'm going to punish man. God said if there's Hamas in the world, there's no point in the world to exist. I'm going to destroy the world. When we say Olam Chesed Yibaneh, the world is built on Chesed, we mean the world is built on Chesed. And if there is no Chesed in the world, then there will be no world. And that is the model that you see in the first story. Now afterwards there's a Brit, and God said he won't destroy it again. But the cycle that you have in the beginning of Sefer Breishit is a cycle of creation and destruction and recreation. That's what's going on. Yes?
There was nothing to eat. And the other thing is that the question of what Sohar was it a window? Was it a light? If, as you say, there is no light anymore, that lends credence to the idea that it was a light, because if there was a window, what would have been the purpose?
That's interesting. That's a good point. Now, the issue of Noah being allowed to eat meat, I think, is much more profound than just his lack of sustenance at the moment, but touches on the reordering of the world. Meaning, when God recreated the world, he did so based on new parameters, which enabled the world to actually sustain itself as part of his new covenant and new Brit, and that's an essential piece in understanding the recreation of the world. How was the first world created? How was the second world created? Based on what? What is the understanding of it? That's a broader issue. Okay. So we have over here basically is our essential act of creation is the creating order from the chaos that then allows you to create new things. We have God deciding at some point that, you know what, this really isn't working out. There's Hamas in the world. It's just fascinating that Hamas chose that name. But that there's Hamas in the world, and therefore we have to reboot, start over, and create a new world. You know, we started off speaking this morning by talking about the young man who had problems following his resolutions on the holiday, and what we said then in the beginning of Elul was that he is not alone. It's a very common feature in our lives to take these moments of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot and to really dwell on them and think about them, and there's so much time to reflect and to be in shul and to, you're away from your normal routine, which already changes things so that you can think of things that you haven't thought before, and it allows you to remember pieces of yourself. It allows you to think aspirationally about things that you want to do and that you want to achieve, and you formulate the plans. And if you didn't, you know, we should formulate the plans, even writing it down. Right, what are the things? What are the, you know, in the literal level of tshuva, the misdeeds that we don't want to do anymore, or in a much more aspirational sense of tshuva that we spoke about, on living consciously and intentionally and achieving the ambitions that we have for ourselves. These are so many of our thoughts that we've had all throughout Elul, and certainly, not necessarily certainly, but more prominently perhaps throughout Tishrei. And then what happens? What happens the day after Shmini Atzeret, or sometimes even the day after Yom Kippur, is that often we return to the routine. We return to the pace of our lives, and all of those thoughts and ambitions and dreams sort of fade away. So what do we do about that? How do we not allow that to happen? And I think that Shabbat Bereshit in this first parak gives us some insights into how to stop that. How to stop that from happening. The first thing is to note that the essential act of creation is being masader, is making chaos from our lives, making order from the chaos of our lives. Our lives are chaotic. They're chaotic in a number of ways, but the pace, the fast-paced nature, the way things move from one to the other. And if you don't think about it, if you don't reflect on it, it just flows. It flows and it continues. What Hashem teaches us in the first parak is to be mavdil, is to slow things down and to distinguish between things. There are things that are kodesh and things that are chol. Things that are holy and things that are sacred. The things that are ikar, that are essential, and things that are tafel, that are secondary. He tells us, or through the Bereshit, we learn to take apart our day, to slow down our lives, to think about how we're spending our hours. And how do we do this Havdalah? How do we do this Havdalah? By naming it. By putting it into words. We spoke about on the first class about gaining consciousness and intentionality. How do we do that? You organize. You understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. Now I'm eating and drinking and relaxing. Great. What's going to come next? What's afterwards? When is the productive part of the day? When is the time that I'm going to be studying? When is the time I'm going to do chesed? When's the time for my family? We could slow down our day. Break it down, put it into words, and be mavdil. Be mavdil. And if we don't, then the day is chaotic. And it's just left in disarray. So that's one thing that is a critical lesson. Another is the incredible line of Vayar Elokim Ki Tov. God needs to look at what he did and decide that it was good. Vayar Elokim Ki Tov, he looks back, and everybody says, oh, that was a good job. Why do we do that? It's a critical life lesson. It's a critical life lesson to teach you to evaluate and to assess. How am I doing? How am I doing? And one of the lessons, and I heard this in the name of Salvechik, is that oftentimes when we evaluate and assess, we focus on failures. But what God is teaching us is that Kitov, you should focus on successes too. It's important to look back, not just for charata and tshuva and what we've done wrong and all the terrible things, but it's important to look back and for positive reinforcement and say, you know what, that worked out. I did that well. That's good. You could praise yourself. Vayaralakim kitov. That's mutter. You know, in our, you know, world of guilt, you know, sometimes we can't say that, you know, that was good. No, you're allowed to, Vayaralakim kitov is a heter for you. If God could say it, we're allowed to say it too. Vayaralakim kitov. But you should know, and this is what's the amazing thing, it wasn't all good. It wasn't all good. You know, we pointed out that there was one time where God didn't say Vayaralakim kitov, and that was when he created man. So why didn't he say Vayaralakim kitov? So the traditional answer that you heard, why does he say Vayaralakim kitov then, is because it's unfinished. Man gets to decide what he is, and therefore God can say it. But I would like to suggest to you a different approach. God actually did look back on man. And you know what God decided? Lo tov heyot adam levado. And the second parak is a very interesting pasuk that starts lo tov. It was not good. Vayaralakim kitov, because he looked back and said that was good. But you know what? There are times when he looked back, or one time when he looked back and he said, it wasn't good. You know what? That wasn't good enough. I need to do better. I need to do more. So the second lesson that we see is to evaluate and to assess. And to assess. Sometimes you assess positively, Vayaralakim kitov, and sometimes it's lo tov. It's not good. And you need to do that. Because if we don't do that, then we lose track. Then we just continue. We continue the pace. We continue moving. And we don't think about, and we don't evaluate our actions. When should you do those things? When should you do Vayaralakim kitov? When should you look back? So there are different points of the year which you could do that. You could do that like Hashem did at the end of a project, whatever the project is. You could pick Vayera Vayavoka, you could do it at the end of your day. Okay? If that's too ambitious, and the Musa Sfarim talk about at the end of the day, looking back on your day, perhaps keeping a log, writing down. Okay, that's very ambitious. Probably extremely helpful. I say probably because I've never been able to do that. I haven't even tried to do that. But I'll tell you what I've tried to do, but I failed every time, perhaps until this year. And that is to use Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh, in many senses, could be a mini Rosh Hashanah. Could be a mini Rosh Hashanah. And there it's every 30 days. So it's not every day. It's not even once a week. It's every 30 days. Okay, you just take the time. If you wrote things down on the Yom Noraim, take out that what you wrote down and look at it then. If you didn't, write something down and take it out on Rosh Chodesh. Or just, it could be 15 minutes of your day. It just to assess and evaluate. And evaluate. I was speaking to a psychologist friend of mine. I told him, you know, I've tried this every year and I've always failed. And he said, well, you should do something, you should form a habit surrounding it. Meaning, I think it's interesting that in a later development, there was Yom Kippur Katan that occurred before Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh. He said, fast on Yom Kippur Katan. If you would fast on Yom Kippur Katan, that would put you in the mindset to do that. And I'm like, I don't really want to fast. I was so happy when we finished fasting, man, this spring. He's like, well, you could try a Taina Dibor. I'm like, can I tell other people to do a Taina Dibor? Whatever it is, there's no magic bullet. Whatever it is, it could be something to trigger you, something behaviorally that you do every Rosh Chodesh that triggers you to know, you know what, I'm going to take this time at 10 o'clock, this 15 minutes, this half an hour to review and to think about it. Now, I could just tell you so far I'm one for one, because today is Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. Okay, but I'm sharing it with you. You could be one for one too. We're still in the beginning of the day. So Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, I think, is a good time by Yaralakim to assess, to evaluate, and to look back. That's number two. Number three is Shabbat. Number three is Shabbat. Shabbat is a time of Shvitah. Now, we don't have the time to analyze Shabbat, which is certainly multi-layered and very complex. But I would just say that Shabbat is not just to the assess and to evaluate, but Shabbat comes as a sense of Shvitah, as a sense of rest. But rest doesn't just mean relaxing. It means shutting down a little bit so that we can recenter and recharge. To recenter around our priorities. The week was busy, it was hectic, it was crazy. And then you come to Shabbat and you don't have all of that stuff. Okay? And then you can recenter. You can refocus and you can recharge and remember your priorities. Well, my family, my kids, maybe you know, my learning, whatever your priorities are, whatever your how you want to value, you know, place your values. Shabbat is a time of Shvitah, of absolute Shvitah, where we can recenter around Hashem, recenter around our family, recenter around Torah. So that's number three. And the fourth is to know that failure can happen. That failure can happen. And when it happens, it's okay, it happens. And you know what we could do when it happens? You could reboot. You can reboot. Even Hashem needed to start the world over again. He needed to reboot. And if Hashem could do it, we can do it too. We don't need to wait until next Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to start rethinking about tshuva and what we want to be and all those other things. If we find ourselves moving in a course, an unproductive course, so we can reboot and start over there. So these are the four tips that I suggest that we learn from the first parak to continue the momentum started by holiday season. First, to organize the chaos, to slow life down and put into words, to be mavdil. Two, to evaluate and assess at set intervals and stages. Three, to recenter and recharge, most prominently, of course, Shabbat. And four, when necessary, to even reboot. This is a critical issue. To maximize your life. There is no one right answer. These are just four suggestions. You could have many more suggestions that are far more profound than anything I've just said. But the point is to think about it and to formulate your own plan of action. We don't want to wake up. We don't want to wake up after a year of sleepwalking through life and find ourselves a next year's Rosh Hashanah is rolling around after we just spent this time on autopilot for the year. We need to live consciously, intentionally and effectively, so that we make the most of our days and maximize the years of our life.